Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. It is another new time. So my shows are usually on Tuesdays, 2 to 3 p.m., but I've got some fill-ins to fill you guys with some new episodes. I will be away for the month of June, so these are the episodes that will be rerunning through those weeks that I will be gone. For today's episode, I will be doing a continuation of the short story that I read out for you guys yesterday. In this episode, I'll be going through the creative elements that were incorporated throughout the story, those personal choices, why they were made, and what that possibly enhances in the entirety of the story as a whole. I will also be doing a continuation of our song listening further into the album Rock and Roll Revival by Loverboy Band, and we'll end off with some fun facts as well. I believe tomorrow, I searched it up yesterday, and it seems that tomorrow is the last day of final exams. So I came to campus today, like I usually do. Most of my shows, if not all of them, are done in person, and it seems like there's a lot of students on campus right now. The weather is really, really amazing, and so it seems like a lot of students are going outside, enjoying the weather, enjoying the hot sun. Today is actually very, very hot. I actually didn't even wear a hoodie for coming here, and so you can really definitely feel summer is slowly coming, which is exciting. All right, before we get into everything, let's get into the ads, PSAs, and show promos, and we'll get right into the episode. So here we go.
Hello. This is Pure Dracula from MacLu, and you are tuned in to CITR Radio. 101.9 FM in Vancouver. CITR.ca.
Okay, let's see here. Blend equal parts science and stories. Add a few shakes of music and soundscape, and wrap it all up in a big question. How can we see this more than human world in a new light and take part in shaping a healthy Anthropocene? Catch Future Ecologies every Sunday at 8 a.m. on CITR.
Join us every Saturday from 8 till noon for Saturday's Edge with your host, Steve Edge, as he guides you on a journey to world and roots music, with African, Latin, and European music in the first half, followed by Celtic, blues, songwriters, and Cajun in the second half.
If you or someone you know has experienced sexual assault, you are not alone. Stand Informed Legal Advice Services is a new program offered by Community Legal Assistance Society that provides free legal advice to anyone who lives in BC and has experienced sexual assault in this province. Stand Informed offers up to 3 hours of free, confidential legal advice, regardless of age, gender, income, whether the assault has been reported to the police, or if you are uncertain that what you experienced is sexual assault. To access Stand Informed services, call 604-673-3143 or email standinformed@clasbc.net.
Storytelling is powerful. Our stories carry personal and collective histories, build bridges of understanding, and shine light on unseen truths. Your story, your voice, your power. CITR and Discorder is excited to announce the release of 5 unique podcasts as a part of its Power and Voice podcast incubation program. Power and Voice is an entry-level educational program created by CITR to surpass traditional barriers to entry into the medium of spoken word radio and podcasting. The result is a series of podcasts demonstrating a wide diversity of work in genre, structure, and content. Tune in every day from April 14th to 18th from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. to hear Power and Voice storytellers share their stories on their own terms and in their own words.
Western Canadian Music Award winners Sargent and Comrade are back with their signature blend of lo-fi soul and ninja funk. Their upcoming album Power draws inspiration from the art of kung fu with themes of inner harmony, discipline, and self-love. Catch Sargent and Comrade in concert presented by Infidels Jazz at the Kingsway Club in Vancouver on Saturday, May 3rd. Signature blend of lo-fi soul and
good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. I hope you guys are having a wonderful afternoon. The weather is really amazing today. The sun is shining so bright, and you can really feel the heat when you're walking outside. However, to extinguish that hot feeling, there's still a bit of cold air running through, so great balance to go outside for a walk. Final exam season is still going on. Good luck, everybody. It is a very hectic time of the year. But like I said, just one more day of final exams, and we're off to the summertime. And during summer, there's a lot of exciting things that will be done, I hope, for everybody as well. I will be continuing to do my shows here at UBC, but for me, I will be gone in the month of June, possibly around late August, but I will still be here doing my shows or pre-recorded shows. So tune in as well. Today is a fill-in time explaining the different time of my usual show, which is on Tuesdays 2 to 3 p.m. But it's still great to be here on campus. A lot of students as well. Maybe it's the great weather that's encouraging everybody to come outside and really enjoy the weather. So like I said, for today's episode, I will be running down the creative elements that took place, analyzing the choices that I made, what effects they have, and why I made them, and how that really ties into the overall storyline and the plot and the themes that I really wanted to evoke. So let's get right into it. So to begin with, one of the key creative elements that I decided to use for this story is incorporating a non-linear structure, where the past and the present bleed into each other without traditional breaks. And so this swerving of coming from the present to the past, and that continuous motion from past to present, present to past, it really does add into that uniqueness in terms of how the story flows when you're reading it. So, like I said, the story operates on two timelines, the present-day inspection of the water park, and then moving on to, you know, Oren's vivid memories of his childhood, specifically his time with his father. I knew that I had to have a central figure or kind of a general one idea ballpark of where my character is going to go into when they go from past to present or present to past, just because, you know, this story did have a word limit, and I just felt like it would reduce a lot of confusion throughout the story. And so every time my character would go to the past, it would go to a memory that correlated with his father. And in that way, it kind of creates a sense of order within the story, making it kind of easier to follow along, at least for me. And so the blueprint he receives at the start is not only a narrative trigger, but a symbolic invitation to memory. So his actions touching the parchment, tracing the ink, are echoed in his mental act of tracing memories. And so all these experiences that I was able to incorporate were kind of connecting to the start and the origin of those memories that Oren's later going to be experiencing throughout the story. So in this way, you're kind of implicitly telling the audience and the readers what's kind of going on, what is driving what. So we get a sense of a reasoning behind the actions and what those actions actually lead to. And so this structure mimics how memory works in real life as well. So the non-linear sensory sudden nature of this experience really does tie into the audience members and the readers, and it gives you a sense of relevancy and connection when you're reading the story as well. By allowing the past to surface organically through tactile associations and environmental triggers, the narrative also becomes very immersive and very humane. Like I said, this, whenever I write stories, I want it to really touch people individually and to their own experiences, to create a sense of connection and relevancy to their own stories. And so in that way, not only will they be able to understand the story in a deeper way, but they get an opportunity to look back on themselves and reflect back on their own stories as well. So it's kind of like a two-way thing where it works both with the audience and with the writer as well, the story. So it's not a flashback in the cinematic sense. It's more like the emotional backwash of memory. And so, like I said, this story is revolved around memories and how those are created and brought up in life, how sudden it can be, and how unpredictable. And so it's not more so, you know, like a flashback in terms of, you know, they're experiencing something that is almost like traumatic, but it's more so just, you know, looking back, not only just the scene itself, but what that scene in their past really made them feel, and that there's a much more deeper emotional connection. Now, looking into the uniqueness a bit further of this structure is that it doesn't treat memory as a pause in the action. So, as I was reading the story multiple times when I was revising it, the idea of memory seems almost like everything is stopped in time. And when that happens, I just felt myself having some sort of pause within the story. I just didn't really like that. I wanted this story to be a linear thing, which is hard because we're continuously going from present to the past and then past to the present in no real specific order or a specific organized timeline. And so I really try to focus on using this structure to really emphasize on how these memories and these experiences of going back to the past mentally is just the same as it is with moving forward. And so I want to say that the message that I wanted to really focus on is that memory is the action. Memory is a way to move forward and is almost can be a tool to move forward successfully. And I think sometimes when we forget about it or neglect those memories, it can almost create a deeper scar within ourselves. And so sometimes, you know, going back to the past and really just reminiscing about your past can help you in a way to move forward as well. Now, additionally, the inspection serves as a loose skeleton on which the real narrative, which is the internal processing of grief and recollection, is hung. So there's no clear demarcation between now and then because for Oren, his past is still shaping his present in real time. So like I said, this kind of ties into back to my point of how going back to memories and the concept of memory and the practice of going back to your memories and just expressing it, it is a way of moving forward. And because the memories that Oren is kind of drawing back from, it all ties into who he is today, in the present day. And so in that way, it kind of strengthens that argument that, you know, memories is the action. Now, going into the sensory details and the materiality of emotion, one of the most critical creative techniques I used in this story is the immersive sensory description, especially of touch and smell. These are probably one of the most time-consuming aspects when I'm writing stories, but also the ones that contain the most rich in detail and really helps a story get into more depth when you're reading it. There's just more, there's more color and there's more substance, more detail when your sensory details are really, really intact and done in a perfect manner. So, for example, these details anchor those emotional experiences in physical ones, creating a rich, tangible landscape of memory. When, for example, when Oren first receives the blueprint, his response is not just the visual aspect of it, but it's very tactile. So he says, "The blueprint's smooth, slightly stiff parchment absorbed the dampness of my eager grip." This sentence does not only do show the anticipation, but it also shows his nostalgia and his reverence. And it's all communicated through texture. And really going into these textures and how those connect with those sensory details really does add depth into the weight of impact that Oren is experiencing through this simple blueprint. Now, the story continues with this pattern of using the senses as emotional cues. You know, the plasticky scent of pool floats, the metallic clatter of water slides, the heat sticking to his skin. These aren't just background details. They are all emotional triggers as well. And so when I was writing these sensory details, I wanted to create them in a way that was relevant, in a way that wasn't too out of reach. Sometimes we get carried away, especially me, when I'm trying to come up with different sensory details and unique ways to express something, they end up sounding very unnatural. And so what I like to do is just come from personal experience. You know, when you go into the water park, you can smell that plasticky scent, you know, the metallic clatter of water slides, you know, the feeling of heat and how that's being expressed through your body. All these things are kind of drawn from my own personal experience. And through that, I just feel like it's just more natural as well. And so suddenly, when Oren is not a grown man on a job, he's a barefoot kid racing through the park. And so through these descriptions of Oren being an adult and then going through these flashbacks as a kid, not only is this emphasizing from memory and how he's just kind of reminiscing about the past, but he himself is turning back into the kid as well. He's putting on that suit of being a young kid, being excited and thrilled just to go to the water park. Now, one of my most favorite things in terms of the details was the smell of his father's thermos. For instance, the rich, nutty aroma of his Colombian roast is less about the coffee here, and it's more about the comfort and the routine and the love that's put into this description. And so not only is this emphasizing the care and love that Oren used to have for his father, but it really is taking into picture how much of an influence Oren's father had on him and how highly Oren looked at his father for him to remember all these details. Now we're going to move on to the metaphor and the symbolism of the story, beginning with how, most notably, it is recurring images of craftsmanship and water. So these symbols are not merely decorative, they reflect deeper themes of control, permanence, and even emotional fluidity. So water in particular plays a dual role. On one hand, it is the source of childhood joy. So slides, floats, mist. But on the other hand, it is the metaphorical conduit of grief. So water moves, flows, and escapes much like memory. And I wanted to use this idea of water to connect to the main theme of memory and really focus on the movement and the function of water. And this kind of all ends up connecting to memory itself. So when Oren recalls his father's breath as he applies sunscreen, saying carrying the faint familiar scent of his afternoon coffee, it's not just a moment of nostalgia, it's a moment of rehydration, of emotional saturation. So craftsmanship, meanwhile, stands as a metaphor for fatherhood, patience, and legacy. So Oren's father, a carpenter, represents stability and care through the act of building, whether it's the canoe or a movement of quiet understanding. But these acts of creation mirror Oren's own approach to life and his work. So he inspects things not just for the safety, but for the meaning. Even the act of tightening a bolt or analyzing water pH becomes layered with significance. And these small tasks are not just professional duties, they're rituals of remembrance. And so, although these descriptions and these experiences may seem like they are simple memories that Oren's just drawing from, they carry a much more deeper meaning behind them. And I'm also very aware that everything here overlaps within each other. Memory, water, craftsmanship, you know, the experiences of his father sharing warm words, sharing his passion for rocks, all these different experiences end up within this framework of these core concepts that I was trying to portray. And so, lastly, I want to talk about the themes, kind of more in depth with the legacy, loss, and unspoken lessons. At its heart, the story is about how we inherit meaning, not through the dramatic revelations, but through the subtle repetitions. For example, Oren isn't haunted by a single tragic memory. Instead, he's shaped by a series of small tactile moments. So like sunscreen on his face, pebbles on the ground, a thermos full of coffee. These are all the core memories his father referenced and the emotional bedrock of who he is. And so this was actually a detail that I was trying to emphasize as well, is that memories don't all have to be significantly big. They don't have to be an event that happens every once in a while or every couple years, or like a birthday. It can be as mundane as just hanging out with your dad in a water park, or the coffee that he just always used to drink out of, the mug. All these small memories end up becoming a significant part. And that is what I wanted to emphasize, because sometimes we can forget that. We can forget that the small things are really big things in disguise. So another thing that's unique is how the story treats these themes, not as lessons to be taught, but as truths to be remembered. And like I said, I'm not trying to teach anybody anything throughout this story. It's just about reminding people that everything is valuable. Every memory, everything that we experience, it all has some sort of meaning and value to us. And as long as we just are open to it and aware and really just look out for those moments, it will serve you well. Not only as someone who's just going to be living your life, but even your point of view in life. And maybe that can impact you and how you approach it as well. So, for example, the father's line, "Believe it or not, Oren, this is going to be a core memory." This repeats in the reader's mind. It's gentle, loving, and filled with a kind, prophetic weight. The narrative doesn't conclude with catharsis or revelation, but with a continuation. And Oren walking forward, still holding his father's voice, actions, and passions with him, reinforces this idea that, you know, this is a continuation. It's not just experiencing grief, and that's that. And so, to conclude, by blending these practical elements of, you know, poetics and really tying these words together with metaphors to evoke these emotions and these themes, they really just emphasize that the story is less about what is lost and more about what is held on to, even if we don't realize it. So, because in the end, every bolt tightened, every rock examined, and every sip of coffee becomes part of that quiet inheritance. So, like I said, this story isn't trying to teach anybody, you know, about anything. It's just about putting value into those memories and those small moments that we may assume are small and very, very minor parts of our lives. But at the end, they too hold a very, very large, valuable, significant portion in our lives. And I think we all have those. It's just a matter of when we get to realize and be aware of them. And when we do, I hope that that brings happiness to everybody as well. All right, so that is the analysis portion of today's short story that I wrote called Core Memory. For the next couple minutes, I will be turning on some songs for you guys. The first one being The Kid Is Hot Tonight by Loverboy. This is from the album Rock and Roll Revival. I really had a great time listening to these songs and this band. It's really just a great song in general. So I really hope you guys enjoy this, and I will see you guys soon. Do it. that was The Kid Is Hot Tonight by Loverboy. The next song I have for you guys is called Lucky One, so I hope you guys enjoy this one. So here we go. That was Lucky Ones by Loverboy. The last song I have for you guys today is called Always On My Mind. So I hope you guys enjoy this song and stay tuned for some fun facts to come. So here we go.
High school.
That was Lover Boy called Always on My Mind. So let's get into the fun facts. I haven't done a lot of these fun facts in a while, and why not? You know, it's a beautiful day, and I think many students right now are probably drowning in stress, and a small laugh can heal something. And that is what I believe in. And so let's get into the fun facts. The first one being human noses can smell up to 1 trillion different scents. I want to give you guys a ballpark of what the number trillion really means. So I believe it goes millions, billions, and trillions. Trillion. So for you guys to understand what a million or a trillion really, how big of a number that really is, a million seconds is 11 days. Okay? 1 billion seconds is 32 years. That's the difference between 1 million and 1 billion. Trillion is after billion. So now you guys can kind of think how much of a big number is trillion. So, for the fact that we can smell 1 trillion scents, I don't even know how that was even calculated or come to a conclusion, because, I mean, I'm assuming that there's some sort of scientific equation or theory that should be taking place for this. But, I mean, it's a great fact. I mean, that kind of goes to show how unbelievable we are as human beings. The next one is, your heart is around the same size as a clenched fist. These fun facts, kind of fun because you can kind of just ball up a fist and kind of compare it and just put it against your chest to kind of see how big your heart really is. For me, I can already tell I have a very big heart, explaining my character. Now, the next one is, peanut butter can be turned into diamonds at extremely high temperatures and pressure. To be really honest with you guys, this is hard to believe. So that means that in some other form, there is a bunch of diamonds in my house. This is insane. I mean, if this fact is true, I'm more curious of how high the temperature has to be and how much pressure is needed to turn peanut butter into diamonds. And I believe that diamonds are probably some sort of fossil. I honestly don't know what elements in peanut butter would ever change into a solid rock. I mean, let me search up what exactly is a diamond. So it says that it's a crystallized cubic crystal structure. And so I'm assuming that it's a really hard piece of object. And peanut butter is very mushy, so I don't even know how that would ever work out. All right, I mean, moving on to the next one. Despite covering 70% of the Earth, only 1% of our planet's water is drinkable. My argument is whether this 1% is drinkable just raw. I wonder if there is a type of liquid or the water that is available in our Earth is filterable. If this category of this 1% of water being drinkable, I wonder if this includes any sort of liquid that can also be filtered. If that would increase this number of drinkable water in this Earth. The next one is, ants don't have lungs. They breathe through tiny openings along the sides of their body. That's very interesting. The next one is, some animals can be allergic to humans because of our dander. Dander meaning dead skin cells. That's interesting. That means, I wouldn't assume that humans can be allergic to animals and then it wouldn't happen vice versa. I would guess it would make sense because we're all creatures of some sort. So that would kind of make sense. The next fun fact I have is the blue whale is the largest animal on Earth, weighing as much as 30 elephants. Its tongue alone can weigh up to 8,000 pounds. Now, to put this 8,000 pounds into perspective, the heaviest lift that was done in our world right now by the world's strongest man, I think, is either 501 kilos. This is 1,000 pounds, 1,100. And for a whale's tongue only to weigh 8,000 pounds, that gives you an idea of how heavy a whale's tongue can actually be. The next one is, this one's kind of sweet. Cows can have best friends. I wonder how this was calculated as well. How would you know that cows are best friends? Is there some sort of behavior that they express within each other and that kind of symbolizes that sort of bond between cow and cow? This is something that I would want to learn more in depth. How would you know that a cow has a best friend? Not even a friend, not just a friend, but a best friend. All right. The last one I want to share with you guys is, not only do rats have the ability to laugh, they'll do so when they're tickled. That's interesting. I wonder where you would have to tickle a rat to get the best laugh out of them. And I also wonder if these laughs are unique with each rat. Because I think everybody has, at least us humans, everybody has a different laugh. There's a laugh, especially some people have laughs where you can kind of, just by hearing their laugh, you already know who they are. And I wonder if rats have this too. I wonder if rats have their own unique way of laughing and that specific sound. And I wonder if they can identify each other through their unique laughs. I wonder how. My question here is that if laughing is the same thing as us, where humans laugh and rats laugh, and I'm assuming that the laughs that rats do sounds somewhat similar to humans in terms of how it flows, the tempo, maybe like the giggling sounds, but then when they communicate with each other, it's like they have a different language. And this ties into my point of, I wonder if we're just not able to understand the language that is being spoken within these animals. But at the same time, you don't really see animals verbally saying anything, other than dogs barking and maybe birds chirping. And it seems very behavioral between the interactions with them and with, each other. And so I guess in that way, we can kind of understand where they're coming from and how they're kind of communicating. Maybe us humans are more verbal with communications and animals are much more behavioral. But yeah, I'm always curious about animals. I really wish that I could really talk to them and learn about their purpose in life. Because I think sometimes animals have this we kind of view animals as just, you know, them having a sole purpose, you know, and surviving. That's their whole purpose, you know, reproducing, you know, eating good food, just surviving and just living life. I wonder if they all each have different goals and purpose and reason for why they live. Like, what drives them to just continue to live on? You know, what is their driving motivation? What do they look up to? Maybe it's simple. Maybe it's complex. We would never know. Maybe we will. Maybe we'll be able to invent a translator for animal communication. And when that day comes, I will let you know how that goes. All right. That was a fun fact segment. I love doing these. I hope it gave you guys some positive energy and some light into your day today. Although we have plenty of light today from the sun. But you can never have enough sun. You can never have enough positive energy. And with that, I wish everybody a good luck with their finals, with their last assignments. Congratulations. You're doing amazing. I believe in you all. And I really, really hope that you guys can end off everything successfully and get ready for an amazing summer. My name is Jeff. This was Lean In with Jeff, and I'll see you guys all next week. Have a safe week, everybody, and I'll see you all. Bye-bye. We were arguing about who would do the dishes. It's a regular Monday night. Neither of us have the time, but we're too tired to fight. Whoa, and you came up behind me, smiling really smooth. I know there's dirty dishes, but I have some dirty wishes. I know there's dirty dishes, but I have some dirty wishes. I don't wanna do the dishes, but I wanna do you. Dishes are dirty, and so are you. I wonder which I wanna do. The dishes are dirty, and so are you. I wonder which I wanna do. You were washing, I was drying, we were dancing by the sink. You turned to me, put down the plate, said, how about it, what you think? Whoa, and you came up behind me, smiling really smooth. I know there's dirty dishes, but I have some dirty wishes. I know there's dirty dishes, but I have some dirty wishes. I don't want to do the dishes, but I want to do but I wanna do you. I don't wanna do the dishes, but I wanna do you. I don't wanna do the dishes, but I wanna do. Nacimos, ya no me.
porque tú y solo tú me alelas cuando cantas ese jazz lento. Porque tú y solo tú me alelas cuando cantas. Porque tú y solo tú me alelas cuando cantas ese jazz lento. Porque tú y solo tú me alelas cuando
carabine, a bailarlo en la punta del pie.
Porque tú y solo tú me alelas cuando canta ese bolero lento. Porque tú y solo tú me alelas cuando cantas. Porque tú y solo tú me alelas cuando canta ese bolero lento. Porque tú y solo tú me alelas cuando
something grotesque, yes.
Pride got you down? Brace yourself for Vancouver's Shamefest 2024. Shamefest is a burning effigy of queer failure and the outsider artistic community terrorizing the downtown east side. From August 1st to August 5th, Shamefest has 8 dehumanizing live music.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots, global, unembedded, international, independent news hour. And this is CITR 101.9 FM.